The House Transportation and Regional Governance Policy Committee will come to order. We have a quorum present, and I wonder if I could get a motion to approve the minutes from the February 27th meeting.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Barr. Moves approval of the minutes from the February 27th meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the minutes of February 27th are approved. Right, we have a number of bills today, and we'll start with House File 1437. And all the folks in the vests are going to be well attuned here. So, Representative Bliss, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'll move your bill, House File 1437, and that will be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, why don't you proceed then and describe your bill for us?
Thank you. This bill, I've got an amendment that will be submitted prior to the next stop, and I just wanted to discuss that a little bit. This bill is asking for a study of a four-lane highway, and my bill, my amendment is to study feasibility and options other than a four-way, up to and including a four-way, but other options as well. And I'll also be adding economic and environmental impact study on those options. So those will be also added at the next stop. The money is $4 million. That's high. In speaking with the Department of Transportation, we've talked it's going to be more in the $1 million to $1.4 million range. So that number also will be updated prior to the next stop.
So, Representative Bliss, is this a project that has kind of had a long history and a lot of discussion, and nothing's happened, or what?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing project. There's all the way up 371 from Little Falls up to Brainerd. They expanded it to four lane, and they went to I believe the next town up was Nisswa, and then from Nisswa to Pine River, Jenkins. And then from Jenkins to Pine River is the next, the study that was done. And then this one is going to go from, the study is from, I have Jenkins to Cass Lake, but I just recently found out that there was a study already done up to Pine River, so that it'll be amended again to say Pine River to Cass Lake.
Okay.
And it has been ongoing for quite a while, and there is a lot of passion in this one, so... there's going to be testimony on both sides.
Right. I see.
Passionate testimony.
Well, why don't we begin with that? Do you have testifiers in favor first? We could take a couple minutes of that.
Who's going to, Richard, do you want to come down?
I like the laws.
Yes.
Testimony?
Good afternoon, sir. And if we could, we'd like to keep sort of a couple minutes of testimony.
And Madam Chair, if you indulge me one time, this is my first time in front of your committee, and I am a freshman, and the treats are being passed out.
Very good. You got your schooling. Okay.
How do we get one of those vests?
I'm sure Mr. Batchelder will be happy.
Sir, please have a seat, and we will begin. Yes, in front of the microphone. So why don't you give us your name for the record and make your comments, and if we could, just keep it in a couple of minutes.
Okay, that's going to be do the best I can. My name is Rich Sigert. I've been involved with this organization since back in the late 80s. We got pictures of the group that started. Most of the people are not on the committee anymore because they've retired and gone. But, yes, we are working on this a little bit. Before I go any further, I'm also going to introduce Mr. Tim Suppner. He's with the Beltrami County area, and he's going to testify a little bit on their behalf and in support of this. This roadway is a proposal to build four lane and get the best roadway possible on a 120-mile stretch from Little Falls to Bemidji. Over half this road has been completed already. We've been working on it for a long time. The growth and traffic patterns are getting to the point where people aren't using the road anymore. They're going other directions. This road is an 8 to 9 county area benefit. It is, in our estimation, it's the best investment Minnesota can make in that region. The increase in sales taxes, property taxes, and revenue for the counties and cities is far outweighs any other problems. The school districts, how it provides help for all the schools. There's a lot of colleges all the way from Central Lakes College to BSU, to Oak Hills College, to Leech Lake Tribal, Red Lake Tribal, Red River College, and International Falls are all very much, it would benefit all of those schools. But I'm looking at, you're not going to be much time here, but also we look at 371 as probably the most powerful roadway and contributes significantly to the economic welfare of North and Central Minnesota. We can't think of a better investment into the state for this particular region. So we want you to support it, at least push it and study it and get it going.
Very good.
He's here.
Thank
I
you.
Also have a letter that I think Mr. Bliss may be submitting. Came in from Mayor Bob Anderson from International Falls.
Certainly.
That shows you the impact for the whole region from Little Falls all the way to the Canadian border.
All right. We can get that to the committee, sir.
It's actually in the packages. There's letters for and against in your package.
Okay. Very good. All right, and we'll move on to the next testifier. Please give us your name for the record, sir.
Tim Sumner, Beltrami County Commissioner. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing this time to hear testimony in regards to the Paul Bunyan Expressway. My name is Tim Sumner. I'm currently Chair of the Beltrami County Board of Commissioners. I am here to voice my support for House File 1437. I personally voted against the resolution in support when the proposal came to the county board. At the time I couldn't support it because I felt there are plenty of road infrastructure that needs to be done in Beltrami County. Today I am here to support the House File 1437 because I understand the huge economic impact this will have on local counties and cities. Bemidji and Beltrami County are seeing a growth in all areas, including schools, and population, demographics. So today, I believe, is the day to plan for the future. So I encourage you to think thoughtfully in this request. And again, thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you very much. Was there any, you had some other testifiers, or should we move on to the, I understand there's an opponent?
Yeah, I don't think we have anybody else in favor. And
I don't know if anybody else is going to speak.
Okay, and then I believe we've had some sign-ups on the sheet for speakers against.
All right, we've had two in favor. If there are two opposed, I guess we'd be willing to hear that. Is there anyone wishing to speak in opposition?
Okay.
And help yourself to a chair and introduce yourselves and give us your testimony, please.
Jed Schaub, Mayor of Walker. Gary Wilkening, City Council, City of Walker.
Okay, very good. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity for us to testify. Walker understands Bemidji's position for wanting a four-lane connector to the metro. It means higher speeds to decrease travel time, improves movement of freight, goods, services, things of that nature. One thing I think in this proposal that has been forgotten with the Paul Bunyan Expressway is that US 71 was actually a federally designated road that was designed to be a connector from the metropolitan area to Bemidji. Paul Bunyan Expressway has come along. Now they're shifting their focus that way. Walker believes and supports in traffic safety, and we tried to work with MnDOT to decrease our speed limit coming into our town half-mile perimeter recently. And their finding is that our speed versus traffic load doesn't support any decrease in speeds coming into our town. When you look at the traffic numbers coming in from Pequot Lakes, which was the most recent alternate that was created, at that point you're looking at about 12,700 cars. By the time you get north of Walker, 200 north to Cass Lake, you're down to 3,600 cars. That's 35% of the total vehicle traffic. Any engineer I've ever spoke with over the last decade regarding this says the traffic numbers don't support it. So we're here to encourage you not to spend that money on studies and to look at paving the roads that we've already got and improve possibly with some alternate turn lanes, things of that nature. But, you know, to spend even $1 million in our mind is way too much. If you've been to Walker, ask the people, you'll find that we don't want a high-speed traffic highway. We like the congestion we get 6 weeks a year. That's really about 12 weeks or 12 days a year. We joke that you know, our rush hour lasts from 8:45 or 7:45 to 8 o'clock and 4:30 to quarter to 5. And it takes 2 minutes longer to get through town. So thank you for that.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, sir, would you like to make further additional comments or something?
Really just here in a supporting role is what
okay.
I'm doing. So
okay.
No, I'm fine.
Very good. Is there anyone else who wishes a question from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Bernardi?
Thank you. I do have a question for our testifier. So just so I understand this right, that you're having difference of opinion that MnDOT wants to keep your roadway going higher speed through town than you would prefer it to go?
Well, we
Mr. Shaw?
We had a request from some property owners on the southern edge of our city to ask MnDOT to lower the speed. It comes up 55 miles an hour into town, and then it slows down 45 as you're already in town. And there's a business, several businesses on the outside where they've said, you know, is there any way we can slow down traffic? Well, we can. We can approach MnDOT and see if that'll happen. So they conducted a traffic study on the speeds that were coming in, the average speed people were traveling, looked at the accidents, and they came back and said there's no reason to lower the speed limit coming into town.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, just one follow-up comment. I'd love to talk with you after about this. I think the current law that we have, it's a policy law, about speed limits is archaic, and I don't think it really helps promote the mission that we have for our state of Minnesota of creating a transportation system that promotes the health of individuals, the economy, and the environment. And this small request to create a roadway in which helps serve the needs of your community is very helpful. And I realize it's not all about signs. There's other things that need to go along with it to actually slow down the traffic to that. But I think that I just want to point out, I think that's something our committee needs to address in the future.
Right. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Bliss, thank you for the treats and the importance of the learning the freshman way. So a question for you, Representative, just regarding the businesses from Jenkins to Cass Lake. And what was their response to this? And was it similar to that of those businesses and residents in Pequot Lakes?
I have
Representative Bliss.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I have not spoken to anybody south of Walker on this issue. I can tell you that the Walker businesses have let me know they're not in favor of it, rather vocally, which is why I made the amendment the way I did. And just, you know, back to the bill a little bit, this is just meant to be a study as a base for discussions. This project's been going on for many, many, many years. You know, if the study comes back and says we don't need a four-lane, maybe a passing lane in this area would work. I've also gotten emails from local business owners in the community of options to help alleviate the traffic flow through Walker, and those could be included in that study. And also, and to the businesses in Walker, I would not support any kind of traffic redirection or modification that would impact any businesses whatsoever. So that's why I'm adding the economic and environmental impact study to the bill as well.
Okay. Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a chance to travel to Bemidji a couple years ago and met very specifically about this project with the mayor and some members of the county board, and I understand, you know, how important it is to you. But I guess my question is, and I'm certainly not opposed to studies, but it's a $4 million allocation, and I guess that seems, you know, a little... I mean, again, I'm not an expert on how much these studies cost and what you want to get out of it, but I guess I'd be interested to know what we're getting for the $4 million.
Yeah. Representative Bliss, and we're not the Finance Committee, so
right.
We will
And Representative Horson, to your point, yes, it's too high, and that's that was a placeholder, and I've spoken to the DOT. We're trying to get a little bit more firm of a number in. Their best guesstimate, and I'm trying to work to get a little bit better number before the next committee, which is the Finance Committee, their best guess was right around 1.4 at the high end.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just seemed high, so I appreciate that you're working on that.
Very good. I don't see anyone else interested in testifying at this point. Last call. Okay. I will renew my motion that House File 1437 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the bill moves on. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
And let's see. We may change it up here. If Representative Keel is not in the room, then we'll move on to Representative Anselmo. And this is a double. Is this a double treat day? It's a double treat day. Okay.
Madam Chair, right. This is why we gain weight during session.
Right. So, welcome, Representative Anselmo, and I will move your bill, House File 1659, and be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. So, go ahead and explain your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Commission here. I'm here to introduce House File 1659. House File 1659 deals with an appropriation that we're seeking to help fund the I-494 Commission's commuter services program. This commission is a joint powers organization that is made up of member cities that reside in Bloomington, Richfield, Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka. This group was formed back in 1986 to deal with plans and programs to reduce the congestion that resides on the I-494 corridor. This commission here has a program called Commuter Services that was started in 2002, and this group looks to engage employers, commuters, and try to find ways to reduce commission or congestion. Right now, I'd like to introduce Melissa Madison, who is the Executive Director with the Commuter Services, who will be here to answer questions. And I'm going to introduce first Eden Prairie City Council Member Brad Aho, who is a 494 Corridor Commission member and also a council member.
Thank you, Representative Anselmo, and Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'd also like to thank our authors, who are Representative Anselmo, Representative Loon, Representative Rosenthal, Carlson, and Hornstein. So thank you to all of them. Again, my name is Brad Aho, and I serve on the Eden Prairie City Council, where I've served for 12 years, and I was just reelected to my fourth term in this last election, so it was a good election for me. I've served on the commission for the past 12 years and been chair for the last 6 years of the commission. As Representative Anselmo stated, we're five cities strong, Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Edina, Richfield, and Minnetonka. And what we were formed to do is really to address congestion, because the people in those cities have really been hurt badly by congestion. And so one of the things they thought they should do is really work on congestion issues. So the original group's focus was to focus on I-494 widening and improving the bottlenecks and interchanges on that route. So over time, though, the commission really looked at that and said, we really can't build our way out of congestion, and we really need to do something else. And so we did a study, and we found out that of the people that work along the corridor, 95% of the people drove alone in single-occupant vehicles. And so we also asked, what would people be willing to look at other means of transportation? And about 30% of those people indicated that they would be willing to try another means of transportation and commuting. So at that time, we hired a staff, and we became a TMO, or a Transportation Management Organization. And really what we did is to engage employers, to look at other means of helping their employees get to work through pre-tax transit passes, outdoor bike racks for their employees to bike to work, some training on bike routes. We also have on-site commuter fares at the companies, and where we help the employees to formulate carpools, van pools, and we also assist with customized transit and bicycle commuting route plans. So each year the commuter services holds approximately 150 on-site commuter fairs with large to medium-sized employers and also multi-tenant office buildings. They also hold try-it campaigns, including the Commuter Challenge, Bike to Work Week, and Carpool to Work Month throughout the year to encourage people to try something other than driving alone. Two of the companies that we work with, just as an example of the many companies we work with, one of those is Best Buy. At Best Buy, we manage their commute programs, and those include a fully subsidized Metro Pass for any employee willing to commute by bus to at least 3 days per week. Employees who vanpool pay $25 a person, and Best Buy picks up the remainder of the cost. We also manage a preferential carpool and vanpool parking, and there's about 500 carpoolers at the Best Buy facility. There's a large commuting kiosk located in their main hub, and also we deal with on-site commuter fairs every other month. We also hold on-site events for bicycle commuters. So Best Buy has been a good partner with us, and that really helps to reduce the amount of traffic on 494, and that is really key to us. The Senior Vice President of Communications at Best Buy said, "Commuter services helps us address a major employee concern, getting to work. It's like having an extra staff person dedicated to commuting services." We also do similar services at Starkey Labs in Eden Prairie.
Mr. Aho, if we could kind of speed it up there.
Speed it up? Okay, I'll cut to the chase here. thank you. Commuter services staff has four-time full-time employees, and an average they help 6,000 individual drive-alone commuters with carpooling, vanpooling, and transit, as I stated. Over 2,000 of those drive-alone commuters reported back to us that they switched to a sustainable mode choice three or more days per week after receiving assistance from the TMO staff. And that really has resulted in 35.25 million miles, vehicle miles not traveled. So that is really an impressive result from a small organization with not very much funding. So the commission currently receives its funding from two sources. We get federal congestion mitigation air quality, or CMAQ, grants, and we also have a local match from each of the member cities. The CMAQ money flows through the Met Council, and they have recently changed their interpretation of what activities are CMAQ eligible expenditures. So as a result of that, our funding has been reduced, and that is why we are here to ask for state support so that commuter services continue to operate and provide these great results.
All right, great. Thank you. And Ms. Madison, did you wish to make some comments? Brief comments.
I'll be here just to answer questions if that could be helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Very good. But if you could just say again, the funding is being reduced from the federal level, did you say?
Right. So the funding comes from CMAQ, and the Met Council has changed their interpretation through MAP 21 as to what expenses we can actually qualify. And so some of the administrative costs of to run the organization, they've stated, are not qualified for CMAQ funding. And so that's really changed our funding drastically.
Okay. All right. Do I have any questions from the committee? Is there someone? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Anselmo for bringing this bill forward. It's a good bill. Happy to sign on to it. Those of us that live and work within this this region, within this area, know the need for transit services, and Commuter Services is an organization that's well-positioned to kind of lead us in the right direction there. So thank you for coming to testify today, and I hope you can all support this bipartisan bill.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right. Well, seeing no other others interested in testifying, I'm going to go ahead and renew the motion to re-refer the bill to House File 1659 to the Committee on Transportation Finance. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill passes and moves on to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We're going to do Representative West's bill next.
Thank you.
House File 1518.
Meeting, or officially with this first bill?
Welcome, Representative. You want to move your own bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1518 to be referred to civil law.
That's correct.
Thank
you, Representative West. Please present your bill.
Thank you. House File 1518 allows the deputy registrars to store documents electronically after they've had them for 60 days. You know, they have warehouses full of papers they've had to keep, and I think the retention right now is 5 years. So they have to pay a separate company to store a ridiculous amount of documents off-site, and by statute they're not allowed to store them electronically. So this bill would allow them the option to store them electronically, and they would store them in a secure server that is not connected to the network, so they still have to go retrieve the document in order to do it, but they would be able to email it and all sorts of stuff. The servers would also have to be verified by the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. And it's public safety, right? Yeah. And so to make sure that they're using something adequately secure for the service. And this can save them significant amounts of cash and definitely make the customer experience a lot better when our constituents are using the Deputy Registrar service. And if I miss anything, I have Jim Hurst with me from the Deputy Registrar's office, and he can cover anything.
So, Representative, are we talking about things like motor vehicle licenses? I mean, old ones, or, I mean, sort of things that have been become obsolete?
Madam Chair, yes. Okay. Sure. Yeah, several documents.
Okay.
And
well, maybe Mr. Hurst can give us a little bit bigger idea what we're all talking about.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst, and I am here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. First of all, deputy registrars who also act as driver's license agents, so this bill refers to both, but for the most part, a deputy registrar is also a driver's license agent. What House File 1518 seeks to do is to alleviate the massive amounts of paper documents that the deputy registrar offices are required to retain by the Department of Public Safety. Those retention periods vary from, I believe, 18 months for things such as a motor vehicle tab renewal, to 5+ years for driver's license applications. As you can imagine, especially with driver's license applications, those documents include your full name, your full address, a lot of personal information, and certainly your Social Security numbers. Currently, deputy offices, especially high-volume offices, are forced to take these files off-site to secured storage facilities. And the only time that they are required to retrieve this information is on the rare occasion that the Department of Public Safety might call and say, we would like to see another copy of your hard document of this individual from 3 years ago. It doesn't happen that often, but certainly it has to be accomplished for the department. Incidentally, House File 1518, some of you may recall, is legislation that has returned from last session. We enjoyed broad support with this, and it almost made it to the finish line. It passed all the necessary committees in the House as well as the other body. It passed off the floor of the other body, and unfortunately the clock expired before it could be passed off the House floor last session. Basically, that is what the bill does, is to try and alleviate the documents that our higher volume offices are faced with. Again, this is an option for offices, and the deputy registrar offices who chooses this approach would be subject to the full cost of pursuing it themselves. And with that, I will take questions. If anyone has such.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier as well. I know that at least some of the deputy registrars also do boats, canoes, and other watercraft as well. Is that true of all, and would this also be one of those areas that they would have to retain information on?
Mr. Hurst.
Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, that's a very good question, and as a matter of fact, I asked that specific question just an hour ago of my deputy registrars. To a very small degree, they also do retain some of the documents that we do on behalf of DNR as well. So this would also help in those cases as well.
Okay. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if Representative West or testifier. I noticed on 2.22 and 3.16 you mentioned that provided 60 days has elapsed. I'm assuming that's because a lot of information might need to be looked back at within a certain amount of days. Is that enough time for you, 60 days work?
Yeah. Mr. Hurst?
Madam Chair and Representative Yacom, the 60-day requirement would be the earliest that the office could destroy the paper documents. So the 60-day is to make sure that the transferring to a digital medium is successful and there's no chance of destroying something too soon. So it's probably actually overly... it probably could only be 30 days, but to be safe, we wanted to put in at 60 days. So.
Right. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on the bill? Okay. Seeing none, then, I will renew your motion, Representative West, that House File 1518 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law and Data Practices. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the bill passes and goes on to civil law, data practices. House File 1518. And Representative Keel, I see you're here now. So we'll go back to House File 1126. Welcome, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I will move your bill on House File 1126, and it's going to be re-referred to the General Register. So please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this really brief. This is to adjust some driver's license for restricted farm work, and I'm going to let my testifiers talk about how it affects agriculture.
Great. And who wishes to go first? Good afternoon. Please give us your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Clayton. I represent the Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers, the Sugar Beet Growers, and others in this matter. Representative Keel is correct. This is about farm permits, restricted farm work licenses, especially what they're called. A farm permit allows a 15-year-old who's otherwise qualified to operate a motor vehicle to help parents or guardians with farm work. Dates back to 1963, actually, is when I did the research on the bill. 44 years we've had this where 15-year-olds can do that. It's been amended a few times over the years, but the guts of the law have stayed the same, and the guts are these. You'll find these in the bill on lines 1.18 through 121. You have to assist the parent with farm work. You can't go to a movie. You can't go out on Saturday night. It's for farm work only. Number two is daylight hours only, so you can't operate at night. Number three is within 20 miles of the parent's or guardian's house. That's current law. And you cannot go into a city of the first class. Those are the restrictions we've had since 63. This bill before you does two things. First, it increases the distance from 20 miles to 40. You'll see that on line 1.19. Now, why are we looking at this? Quite simply, things have changed out in the country since 1963. Many of the dealerships, the farm supply areas, the co-ops are farther apart. They've consolidated, and distances are just simply longer. Sometimes you have to go farther for, say, a specialized piece of equipment. On our own farm, I grew up in Chippewa County. If we had to go get parts for the sugar beet equipment, we had to go to Clara City, which was 35 miles, and this is back in 1982. I don't remember if I ever did that. I don't think I did. But if I would have had to, it was longer than 20. The other one that we saw just in the paper about a week ago is a group called Titan Machinery. Titan Machinery is a chain of Case IH dealerships, and they've announced that they're closing 14 locations in the Dakotas and Minnesota. So once again, we're seeing that consolidation. And so that's what the change on 1.19 does. The second thing this bill does, as you'll see that on 1.17, it clarifies that the actual structure of the farm is irrelevant for this license. And again, why is this necessary? Last fall, I got a call from a woman in Nobles County. She actually called the Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau called me, and I looked into it. Said her son went to get his farm permit over MEA break, and he was denied at the counter. And the reason he was told is that the parents had incorporated the farm. That was their reason. Okay, so I told her, I'll check into this and see what I can find out. So I looked at the statute, and there's no such restriction or distinction in the statute about whether the farm is incorporated or not. So I called the DPS supervisor down in that area to ask him about it. He was nice. We had a good conversation about it. And he said he was relying on a memo from someone named Deborah Carlson, presumably out of the St. Paul office, dated January 8, 2009. And that memo stated that a farm permit is only available to, quote, family farms. And this is the department's interpretation. And it's part of their training manual as the supervisors. But the statute doesn't say that. It says, and you'll see this on line 1.16, to assist the person, parent, or guardians with farm work. It doesn't talk about family farm or incorporated farm. The reference you'll see to 500.24 in there, that's commonly called the corporate farm law. In that section, you'll see the definitions for family farm partnership, family farm corporations, and so forth. And that's why we reference there. Essentially, what this does is clarify that it doesn't matter how your parents have the structure of the farm. The license is available to assist them with farm work. I would note one other point here, and this was what I did last fall. This is the affidavit, and I didn't prepare this for your package. This is the affidavit off DPS website. In two places, they reference that the person signing this, the parent signing the affidavit, is doing so to assist the parent or guardian with farm work on the family-operated farm. And that verbiage, again, was just added by the department at some point. And so that's the purpose of the bill. That's what it does. Since that time, I have heard from someone in Dodge County who was denied, and then also someone up in the Red River Valley. They didn't name the county. So this is going on out there. Last point I would make is on safety. Again, this was back in 1963. We have better engineered cars, anti-lock brakes, safety, or mandatory seat belts, airbags, and so forth. Quite a bit different than riding around with Dad in the car in 1963, smoking Lucky Strikes with the windows rolled up. So things have changed in terms of safety with the vehicles that we're operating now. So I would make that point on safety.
And, Mr. Klavan, there may be even fewer cars on the roads, would you say, in some cases, many cases?
Madam Chair, that is a very possible point, given the exodus of folks from rural areas, especially on the Western Strip. Mm-hmm. That is a possibility.
Okay. All right, thank you. And Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And just very briefly, we also support this legislation. It's something that comes up and very often from when somebody has a 14, 15-year-old, and this comes up and they'll say, are we still doing the 20 miles? Because, you know, you think about the rural counties, it's not uncommon to be more than 20 miles from the county seat. And that typically a lot of times might be where a lot of the commerce goes on, whether it's feeds. Equipment is the biggest thing we hear, especially in the fall time. You need to, that's the great job to run. And when that child becomes 15 years old and can really help around the place, that's a great benefit, as a lot of us know. And so appreciate the consideration in updating this. And I also want to echo the updating on the 500.24 piece. We've been doing that in statute a lot, or clarifying that that's what, you know, over the last few years we mean by a farm. So I appreciate the consideration. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Barr, Cal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keogh, just to clarify, because I don't know, it's probably already in statute, what types of vehicles are the 15-year-olds allowed to drive?
Who wants to take that? Mr. Klavan?
Sure, I'll attempt that. Madam Chair, it references motor vehicles, which would be distinguished from commercial motor vehicles. Commercial motor vehicles are 10,001 pounds or more. So semis, trucks, and so forth, my understanding, you couldn't do that. It would be basically a car and a pickup.
No.
Because otherwise, if bigger, you're going to be commercial motor vehicle, and we don't have that here.
I'm good.
Okay. Anyone from the audience wishing to testify? Or Representative Joaquin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. This bill makes complete sense. I only have one quick question on you. Mr. Klavan gave a great overview. Just why changing the shall to the must? Is that just to tighten it up?
Mr. Clayman.
Madam Chair, I will defer to counsel. That wasn't part of my original. Perhaps Mr. Burris can help us.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and members, shall and must are both requirement type verbs, and this kind of goes to a technical drafting philosophy. You might notice a number of bills coming through the revisor's office recently have been changing shall to must as using a more common type of word, and so it's kind of a plain language drafting philosophy technical change reflecting what some staff in the legislature have decided to pursue.
So,
Representative,
Madam Chair, it's as simple as like the difference between an Oxford comma or not. It's the same. I knew I was going to start something if I said that. I understand where you're going, Mr. Burris. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify? Okay. Seeing none, then I'll go ahead and renew my motion that House File 1126 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, same sign. Okay, the motion prevails, and House File 1126 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, members.
What are we doing now? Okay, all right. Next up is House File 1467, Representative Torkelson. Good afternoon, Representative. Welcome to committee.
Madam Chair, how are you?
We're doing well. So I will move your bill, House File 1467, and we refer it to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
Thank you.
Do you want to go ahead and tell us about your bill?
This is a study, a bill to introduce a study on tolling.
On tolling. That just sounds so simple. But
not the kind you do when at church where you ring the bell, but the kind you might do when you go to Chicago.
Okay. All right. Do you want to, is there any more to it, or
should we go into questions? I'm not encouraging you to spend a lot of time on this, but I'd be happy to try and answer any questions if members have questions.
Okay. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick.
Just a question with this study. Is it anticipated that they will review kind of the hours of operation that are necessary, or are we hoping that they, I guess I'm concerned if it's a money generating thing that we're going to build these roads and then just have more people pay for more roads when the general public's kind of paying for them. We have a toll road or Min Pass Lane in Lakeville that I think is the out of operation are a little bit broader than they may need to be to control congestion. So that's kind of my concern, a little bit in tolls in general, but to your bill, I presume that they will report to us on the use of the hours of the operation.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Representative Kosnick. Thank you, Madam Chair. As you mentioned, you know, you don't really think of Minnesota as having toll roads, but the fact is we do, and that is the Min Pass lanes that are really technically a type of a toll road. My understanding of this study is that it would take a look at what's happening with the Min Pass lanes and address those as they look. If this goes forward, as they look at toll, the whole picture of the potential of toll roads in Minnesota would include evaluating what we're doing with the Min Pass lanes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify? Okay. Seeing none, then I will renew my motion that House File 1467 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Post same sign. Bill passes, and it's moving on to Transportation Finance.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. Okay, we have a couple of MnDOT selection process bills, and first we'll go with Representative Whalen, House File 1434. Good afternoon, Representative. Would you like to go ahead and move your bill, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have House File 1434 that I'd like to be passed and referred to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Okay, very good. And I see you have an amendment. Is it the A2 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which makes a clarification to lines 4.7 and 4.8, a technical change, and then deletes the repealer.
Okay, on the A2 amendment then, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative, please present your bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Before I go into the details of the bill, I just want to be sure to thank everyone who's been working with me on this, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, officials at MnDOT, Ionoka County Engineer Doug Fisher, partisan, nonpartisan staff, other members. It's been collaborative thus far, and I hope that process continues. To the bill itself, just in summary before I get into details, it codifies recommendations from the 2016 Office of the Legislative Auditor report on MnDOT's project selection process for our highways. In essence, it seeks to increase transparency of MnDOT's project selection process, with particular focus given to the Corridors of Commerce program. And I just wanted to share briefly how the lack of transparency to date has actually affected my district in particular. And before I do that, I will say it's not an indictment against any particular person or persons, but I was very disheartened when I read this and that led to this bill. So the OLA report found that the Transportation Program and Investment Committee selected Corridors of Commerce projects based on themes that the scenarios addressed and not the project's rank. In particular, this adversely affected a project in my district that was chosen, that was not chosen, and at the last minute, a different project on Interstate 694 was chosen to receive funding over several other highly ranked and similarly priced projects, including U.S. Highway 10 and Armstrong Boulevard. That project, which actually has been completed to date for various other reasons, but that project had the highest return on investment of all evaluated projects, and yet it was not chosen. Although MnDOT prioritized project readiness at that time, again, it wasn't chosen, even though it was ready 1 year prior to the 694 project. So again, just as a legislator, it was really disheartening to read this, and I just want to reemphasize this bill is not an indictment against any person or persons. I had a great meeting with folks from MnDOT in my office. They've already indicated their willingness to work on this issue with us, and they indicated as much in their response to the OLA report. And I will say, though, the bill is an indictment against what I see as the culture we face here at the legislature, not just with MnDOT, with agencies in general. There seems to be a lack of trust. And so this bill, I just hope, is a step toward rebuilding that trust. Again, it's not the fault of any one group in particular. We know part of the tension with this in general that we face with the Transportation Committee is the topic of earmarks. And I would just like to say that potentially we see earmarks from legislators because we're frustrated and concerned at what we view as a lack of transparency or a lack of understanding at why projects are chosen. So, again, the OLA report indicates there is reason for this concern, and this bill is just a step, hopefully, in addressing that. Mm-hmm. While I don't think it's a wholesale answer to the problem, I am hopeful that we can continue to work together on this with MnDOT and others. To the bill itself, just as an overview, sections 1 through 3 are changes based on the recommendations from the OLA report, specifically to the alternative project selection, which is most notable, the Corridors of Commerce program. On page 59 of that report, the OLA found that MnDOT did not select Corridors of Commerce programs in a manner fully consistent with laws and requirements, and so that these sections make some clarifications to that and in response to that recommendation. Section 4 of the bill is based on recommendations from page 71 of the OLA report that MnDOT should track local spending on trunk highway improvements. I'm happy to answer questions on that piece as well. Section 5 of the bill is based on recommendations from page 76 of the OLA report that noted the legislature has frequently directed funding toward projects that create new infrastructure, so MnDOT should develop a planning process that enables it to prepare for such projects. And then sections 6 and 7 of the bill are based on recommendations from page 44 of the OLA report that MnDOT should increase the transparency of its decision-making process, particularly by providing information to enable comparisons between projects that are selected and those that are not. So I do have a couple of folks here to testify. Madam Chair, I'd like to hand it over to them, and then I'm happy to answer questions.
Representative, we do have a question from the committee. Representative Hornstein.
Okay. Oh, no, Madam Chair, I think we should do the testimony. I just have some comments on the bill, and I'll save those.
Okay, very good. So, yes, and please invite your testifier.
Yep. I have Noka County Commissioner Doug Fisher to testify, and also a member from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, whichever order you'd prefer, Madam.
Well, let's go with Mr. Fisher, please. Good afternoon, sir, and please give us your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Fisher, and I'm not a Noka County Commissioner. I am
engineer.
I'm just a lowly county engineer from Anoka County. So thank you very much for and I am here in support of this bill. When the Corridors of Commerce program was created back in 2013 by the legislature, we were very excited as this was a way to get a grant from the state to supplement our local efforts to make capacity and safety improvements on the trunk highway system. That was the purpose of the program. And because of the significant crash and congestion issues that we had on some of our trunk highways in Anoka County, we felt that we'd be able to competitively compete for funding from this program. But as Representative Whalen and the Office of Legislative Auditor's report indicated, we were disappointed in how this program was launched implemented. And unlike most other grant programs, there is a very defined criteria of what they're looking for in when they're selecting projects through a grant program. And many of these are MnDOT programs. They're TED program, which is a transportation economic development grant process. They're looking for things that will create jobs and promote economic development. And programs that are safety related, they're looking for exhibited crashes and reductions of crashes due to your project. So this is not unusual. You know, you have a grant program with an emphasis, and you create a criteria for that. And again, that was lacking in this launch of the Corridors of Commerce program. And I think this bill goes a very long way in addressing those things to bring it back to the legislative intent that we were hopeful when this program was launched back in 2013. Just a couple other items to comment on the various sections of this bill. In Section 1, this program was not meant to supplement existing projects in the STIP that are funding shortfalls. It was a program to add projects over and above projects that were in the STIP or the State Transportation Improvement Program. So this was a way to add projects to the state and to the regions. So I think that's very important that the three-year time frame on this, because generally these projects still need some engineering design right-of-way acquisition before they can be launched in construction. So again, that was the intent of this program, to add projects, not to backfill shortfalls in funding. In Section 5, I think in the reporting, I think there are some many things that you really can glean from these reports if they're prepared that provide the information I think you're really hoping to get. In Section 5, the report not only includes what was done, but what's not done and where those capacity issues that this program is supposed to address. It should be reporting all of those problems. You always get the report, we're doing all these great things, and they are great projects. But unfortunately, sometimes what gets left out is what's not being done, and that can be very eye-opening and very important information. And then finally, in Section 7, just a couple things I'd like to note there. There's a lot of things in the reporting that I think are important there. One of the items that actually was stricken from the bill was the report on environmental mitigation and costs for that mitigation. And I know I talked to Representative Whalen on this, and as this bill moves forward, hopefully I would recommend that that provision stay in the bill. And because when you look at environmental mitigation, yes, a lot of those are federally mandated to us, but in Minnesota we can add to those requirements and make those requirements more onerous. And I think they have that information available to show, okay, if the environmental cost on this project was 8% of the total cost, but how much of that was federally mandated and how much was that what I call self-imposed mandates, because, again, that eats against those road and bridge dollars that are so critical to do that. And you could do that with the environmental mitigation. You could do it with right-of-way acquisition. You can do that with even administrative things like the state's disadvantaged business enterprise goals and how much does that add to the cost of projects. So there's a lot of self-imposed things that I think would be very important in the reporting. So, again, I think this bill, again, in closing, does a couple of good things. I think it brings the Corridors of Commerce program back to its original legislative intent and tightens up the reportings to give you the solid information that you as a committee and as a legislature should have as you're making very important transportation funding decisions in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. All right, the second testifier, please. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is David Kirshner. I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and I was the project manager for our report on MnDOT project selection. I was planning, Madam Chair, to kind of list a number of the recommendations and mention that the report addresses in front of them, and Representative Whalen did such an excellent job of that. Honestly, I think I'd be being a bit redundant to go through that in detail, but I do want to say that we felt that it was very important that MnDOT improve its transparency, and like Mr. Fisher said, we thought it was important that MnDOT do a better job of clarifying what it chose not to do, that if all that you heard about was what is being done, but you didn't have a way of comparing that with things that aren't being done, it becomes more difficult to have transparency and understand how the process worked. And so that is a recommendation that is addressed in this bill, and we're very appreciative of Representative Whalen for moving forward some of our recommendations and bringing them before your committee this time around. I would be more than happy to answer any questions that people have about our recommendations or the way in which the bill addresses them, but I don't want to I know the committee has lots to do today, so I don't want to be redundant if I don't
need
to be.
Thank you, sir. We do have a question. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this would be for the OLA, and I'll make comments related to this later. But, and I think you did a great job on this report, and you know, I'd be the first person to ask for more accountability in Corridors of Commerce, because when we represent Petersburg and others were there when we developed this legislation in 2013, it was as Commissioner Fisher, no, Mr. Fisher said. Mr. Fisher, I think, reflected a lot of the excitement, you know, and I think there's still excitement around the state. So I appreciate that you did this. But a comment was made earlier that, you know, there we had this rash of earmarks last year as a reaction to some of the frustration that members had with the recommendations of this report. And I guess I would just ask you, I mean, when you look at the Corridors of Commerce program, even with its problems, do you feel that legislative earmarking even aids and abets those identified problems or corrects them?
Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question.
Thank you for the question. Right? He thinks.
It is definitely our position as an office on all types of policies that we are in favor of transparency. We think that transparency is a good thing, and accountability is a good thing. That's part of what our office is all about. I think there is a lot. There's certainly an argument to be made that legislative earmarks are not especially transparent themselves. The one thing I will say is that, I don't think decisions being made in a room where nobody is quite clear what's going on are a good idea either way, but at least legislators have to answer to the public at an election in the way that folks in MnDOT don't in quite the same way. So, in general, I would think transparency and accountability are things that our office is all about, and we continue to press for on this topic at the stadium, at lots of other places that we come and talk to this body about.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. A question from Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In kind of an expansion of this same discussion, you know, I find it troubling oftentimes. It's one thing as far as what MnDOT plans and has as part of a regional transportation plan or system and implementation of that plan to make sure that the projects have a certain amount of transparency in deciding which ones come first. But with regard to the questions of earmarks, sometimes there are those situations in which I think it's fully transparent when something is brought before the legislature and we have plenty of committee hearings and we have a grave public safety issue that really needs to be proactive in dealing with it expeditiously rather than I'm a little concerned about project eligibility and it being 3 years minimum in the project design stage. We have so many circumstances where by the time a need is identified, it's already a problem, and then by the time you go through the design phase, and then you go through right-of-way acquisition, then you go through the funding, then you get the award, and building the road, too often we hear that it takes 20, 25, even in the case of 610 that just opened up, has been 40 years in building a road. And that really is being poorly reactive rather than proactive in terms of accommodating the growth and the needs of our community. So I just wanted to comment about, I understand the Corridors of Commerce, was an attempt or a solution to get projects implemented and get them going. But when you start putting in statute certain lengths of time for each little segment, I'm troubled by that. I really am.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hurtas, for your comment. And not sure there was a question, but if we're on the same page, I just want to clarify a little bit. And this actually is commentary that came from the county engineer, not county commissioner, Doug Fisher. We were exchanging some emails. But the three-year piece is because the Corridors of Commerce program, again, was intended to fund projects not already in the STIP, and those need time to develop, such as improvements we're seeking on various projects in various districts. So MnDOT, in the past, MnDOT would have used these funds to complete projects that were already in the STIP. And so if there's the case of more funds, we want those to go to new projects. And so that's I'm hoping that helps clarify. But we can also talk maybe more offline about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Whalen, great job bringing this bill forward and presenting it. I think it's an important discussion point that we need to have as a policy committee. I think it's a bipartisan endeavor to have more transparency and to go on the recommendations. Representative Hurtas, I know the project you're speaking of, and I think that, you know, the legislature as a body can make certain exceptions to probably the specific bill in your district and Representative McDonald's district, and I think we should still be able to do something like that of that importance, but I think overall it's good policy for more effective transportation to have tighten up the parameters that we use in this bill. So I hope it's something that the committee continues to consider very strongly, and I thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on the bill? Okay. So, seeing none, then I will. Representative Bernstein.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, thanks for bringing this. I'm not sure we have to codify all this, but there's really nothing in this bill that I think isn't really doable. I do want to return back though to this earmarks discussion because, as problematic, and I will say, as problematic as we've seen in the Corridors of Commerce program, and your recommendations are on point. We had projects that just showed up at the very last minute. We had projects that did not have a local partner, that were not shovel ready, and I think we're just there for political purposes. We picked winners and losers as a legislature, and I think that's wrong. So as we move forward, members, I hope we don't make the same mistake this year that we made last year, which was this kind of earmarking palooza, or whatever the kids call it. I mean, we just went crazy with earmarks. And that is not the way we should be going. And that actually builds on the problems that you've already identified. So, members, I mean, I think we can support this and discuss this, but hopefully it won't, again, lead to more earmarks if it's not acted on.
Mr. Kirshner, did you want to comment?
Just to go back to what I was saying earlier, perhaps legislators might ought to note all the projects that they're not earmarking as well, if that would be in line with our recommendation of noting the projects that are done as well as those are not being done. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just to respond, Madam Chairman and Representative Hornstein, while I somewhat agree with you, in the case of Representative Hertaus and my issue with Highway 12, an earmark was absolutely necessary when you know as well as I do that, and even the media and the public, that the Highway 12 was the corridor of death. When you have 20 deaths in 5 years.
25.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. If we can't earmark that, then we have a big, big problem. That is the earmark city. That is the epitome of what an earmark must be when you have deaths that many in a short amount of time. Otherwise, I can kind of agree with what you're saying.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks. Well, and that was one of the few projects that I believe actually had a hearing. I mean, I remember Representative Hertaus brought a whole group. He brought law enforcement. He brought people who were from his district, local elected officials. He brought people that had been impacted directly in their families and made a compelling case. But I believe that was the exception to the rule. I would have to explore more with MnDOT some of the other issues, but it appeared there was a local partner and it was shovel ready. But a lot of those projects were not. And I think there were folks a lot near you on I-94 that were quite upset and frustrated that their project, you know, again, we picked winners and losers, and that's not what's right. And we're going to continue to pick winners and losers as long as we don't have a stable long-term funding source for roads and bridges in the state. So, I do, again, I want to compliment you and Representative Hertaus for your efforts. Your piece was transparent. Others were not.
Representative Petersburg, how do you view it?
Thank you, and I have to disagree slightly. Again, I also am not real crazy about earmarks. However, as a legislator, we are earmarking virtually all the bills that we do. We are specific about a lot of the things that we have, and a lot of the bills have winners and losers in it. It just depends on which side of the aisle you're on in some cases in others, and that is really part of our responsibility as legislators. We are here to be the person that makes educated guesses and best value judgments upon what we approve and what we don't approve, and we do have to go back to our local constituency and tell them about why we didn't if they have a question about that. And so I think there's a lot of value to that. But getting back to whether or not these earmarks had hearings or not, I could tell you that none of the projects that were selected in that process, they all of them had either a hearing or were part of the plan that the governor put forth in his investment for the next 10 years. Every one of them was on that project list. I know because I was there when we created it. So the point is that I think the frustration has come about because we've been unable to reach the investment that level we have, and that's part of everybody's responsibility. And so I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. But we didn't do that. And we were sitting with the situation where we're going to have dollars taken out of the surplus, put into the rainy day fund, that we had an opportunity to at least spend on projects that had already been vetted by the governor, had been vetted by the Department of Transportation, because it was a list that they had on there. And we went and chose projects within that list. Now, we can argue that, okay, so there were some winners and losers, but at $6 billion worth of projects, that's always going to be the case. And so was there less transparency? Yes. Would I prefer to have more time and get it vetted out? Yes. Well, but when you're coming to deadlines and so forth, sometimes you have to do what you need to do. And so I am just, you know, I think that's in the past, and we need to move forward with it. I don't see that, again, being the norm. But at least it was kind of a wake-up call, and it's one of the reasons why I think we're having discussions that we are today. And so let's move forward with that as well. And understand that we do need to have a process, that the selection process is much more transparent is an overworked used word right now, but at least one in which everybody feels comfortable with. And so I appreciate the opportunity to say something.
The author, did you wish to make a comment at this point or wrap up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can do both if you'd like. And actually, Representative...
We do have another question then. Okay, so Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, bipartisan support was mentioned. I just became a bill author today, and I have been reviewing the bill with Representative Whalen, and I want to thank her for bringing this forward. And I like this because it's really a nonpartisan issue that we can work together on. Those things are very nice to see in the legislature. And what I do want to put a plug in is for the legislative audit process. I serve on that commission, and this was a proposal that I brought to that process, and it got approved for the project selection. And so I want to encourage everybody on our committee, if they have ideas that they think would be good for the Legislative Audit Commission, especially ones that are bipartisan, that we can like really move forward together, that would be really helpful. And so anyway, that is, if you could just ask David, and his last name is not coming up, sorry, David,
Kirchner,
yeah. If you could just comment, when are we going to be able to start doing that selection? When does that process start?
Oh, goodness, I'm not. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not ready with those dates right off the top of my head, but certainly I know that a letter has, I believe, already gone out to legislators asking you to consider projects to be suggested, and I believe the deadline is somewhere coming up fairly soon. I think shortly after the deadline, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But we are always anxious to hear from legislators, and I would add from legislative staff. Often we get some good ideas from legislative staff about things that are worth looking at. And so I'm very grateful to Representative Bernardi for making the plug. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, just a follow-up, and people that are, you know, in this room as well, people
absolutely
that are constituents.
Members of the public
and
can
that
absolutely make suggestions. That is, we welcome suggestions from anyone. Thank you.
So thank you, Representative Bernardi. I think we're all going to benefit from that study, so thanks much. Representative Whalen, do you want to have any final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your comments and support of the bill. Thank you, Representative Bernardi. As mentioned previously, I'm happy to continue to work with folks on the bill as it moves forward, and I really appreciate the time the committee took to have this discussion. With that, Madam Chair, I'll ask for the bill to be moved to Transportation Finance.
Very good. I'll renew Representative Whalen's motion that House File 1434, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, the bill moves on. It the motion prevails. House File 1434 goes on to Transportation Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Whalen. Representative Petersburg. Which one is this? Oh. Representative, do you want to go ahead and move your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 1241 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Please tell us about your bill.
Kind of going on the same vein as Representative Bernardi did on Monday and Representative Whalen did today, this is just a little bit different flavor in regards to the selection process. This one really deals, I think, more directly with best practices or transparency of selection, where some of the other bills are much more detailed and oriented. This basically just allows for more involvement from local transportation authorities and so forth. And I hope it's just another tool that can be used when we put together the final bill. So briefly, I'll just go through the bill quickly because, as you see, it's only a page and a half long. And it really talks about the department setting up best practices, which is a word that's come around over the last 5 years or so as being kind of keywords on determining, you know, what do we have as a general rule and what the best practices we have. And basically this really talks more about consultation with all of the partners in transportation, anywhere from aviation down to local authorities to rail, et cetera, and to develop, adapt, and implement the best practices for evaluation and selection. So it really doesn't go about planning so much as just in the selection part of it. And there are two deadlines or dates in this particular bill. One is January 1 of 2018, and that certainly can be modified, but January 1 would be when they'd start implementing these practices, and then March, they would actually bring the report to the legislature, the key legislators at least, with their information. And the best practices adopted under this section are under B, and they're not in any order of importance, just that they're all included. So I'll just quickly talk about them. First, to identify the criteria and weight of each criteria. I think whenever we decide on a project and a goal, how are we measuring it, and what is the value of each of those measurements. Also, to apply relevant criteria based on federal and Minnesota law. We don't want to usurp anything that the legislature, either in federal or the state, have done. And then also, number three, again, something that the legislative audit really talked about, is also identifying the projects that were not selected. And I think that's also an important piece, as we've talked about earlier. But again, on the back side, on four and five, really talking about the partnerships that we have with local road authorities, counties, townships that may be involved, other planning organizations, and so forth, and how we rank and publicize the scoring of those decisions, and about the projects not are selected. Basically, this bill is really trying to improve the consistency, objectivity, and transparency of the selection process, and it's intended to do it in a way that is not overly cumbersome, but is allows some flexibility for the department to move forward, but always keeping in mind that this is a joint effort. In closing, what I would say is that the Department of Transportation has a monumental task in front of it, and it's a large agency. It's a large, a lot of large moving parts, and because oftentimes the ease and inability to get things done quicker, sometimes we forget about how we need to keep everybody informed about what's happening. And when you don't inform people about what's happening, just as I will comment about the earmarks last year, it allows for a lot of misperceptions and allows for a lot of things to be misinterpreted, and that creates resistance, and it creates hard feelings, and we don't all participate together. So I'm hoping that we can figure out some way in which the department and others that are involved in what is one of the most primary responsibilities of the state, and for us to provide up here in the legislature, is for good infrastructure, which is roads and bridges and all the other modes of transportation. So with that, Madam Chair, I would just appreciate your support and answer any questions.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, and seeing no questions, then we'll move on. I will renew Representative Petersburg's motion that House File 1241 be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 1241 moves on to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative. And that completes our agenda for the day, so the meeting is adjourned.